Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Wednesday, July the 18th, and this is going to be a shorter show today, as there's really not a lot to talk about, but I wanted to do another mailbag show. As I've been saying over the past few weeks, and probably about a month now, I have a lot of questions that have been sent in by you, the listeners, and I want to get through as many, if not all of them, before training camp starts. And obviously, today, July the 18th, was the first day the rookies reported to training camp. Next week this time, all the veterans will report. But today's a big day. It's the day rookies reported. And just another sign that football season is upon us, and it is coming quick. So I wanted to do a show. Like I said, there's not much in the news. Just a few housekeeping bits. I will be doing a couple interviews later this week, this weekend. I'll put at least one of them up this weekend and probably another one up early next week. And regarding the mailbag, I'm through most of the questions. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. I'm getting towards more recent questions that were sent in. So maybe after today and after today's mailbag show, I'll do a couple more mailbag shows, and that should be it. Clean up all the emails. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or anything that you want to send in to us here at DolphinsTalk.com, I can be reached on Twitter at DolphinsTalk or via email at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. So let's just jump into the mailbag, because like I said, there's really not a lot to talk about. First questions from Helen in Mexico City. Should Mark Duper and Mark Clayton be in the Hall of Fame, in your opinion? Always a topic among Miami Dolphins fans that is... fans are, you know, here's the thing. We're all fans of the Miami Dolphins, obviously, but sometimes you have to be a little bit more realistic and objective about things. And as much as we all love Mark Duper and Mark Clayton, you know, honestly, they're really not Hall of Fame players. They're just not. I pulled up their stats here in preparation of this question. And let's start off with Mark Duper. Played 11 seasons in the NFL. You look at the seasons, you can make a case he had 3 Hall of Fame seasons out of the 11. All the other seasons, the 8 other seasons, are really just ordinary, nothing special. In 1983, he caught for 1,003 yards, and that's when 1,000 yards receiving meant something. Nowadays, you know, everybody can catch for 1,000 yards. It doesn't mean anything because the offensive stats and because of the rules and that. It means less. Back in the 1980s and 90s, when you caught for 1,000 yards, it actually meant something because it wasn't an easy feat. So by those standards is how you have to look at these numbers here for Clayton and Duper. But let's start off with Mark Duper. In 1983, caught for 1,003 yards and 10 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. 1984, caught for 1,306 yards and 8 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. 1986, he caught for 1,313 yards and 11 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. So after 86, to the end of his career, you know, he really wasn't a Hall of Fame player. Very ordinary seasons, 597 yards, 626 yards, 1 touchdown, 717 yards, 1 touchdown, 800 yards, 5 touchdowns. They were just ordinary years. And the last big year, one you would say that's a Hall of Fame type season, 1986. So really for Mark Duper, 3 big years in his 11-year career. Not enough to be inside the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's just not. Looking at Mark Clayton, he has a better case, but it's just better. He's not. I don't see him as a Hall of Famer. He played the same amount of years. He played 11 years. 1984, an absolute monster year for Mark Clayton. Caught for 1,389 yards and 18 touchdowns. No doubt about it, that's a Hall of Fame year. 1986, caught for 1,150 yards, 10 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. 1988, 1,129, 14 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. 89, I'll give him a Hall of Fame year. 1,011 yards, 9 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. 91, 1,053 yards, 12 touchdowns. That's a Hall of Fame year. So for Clayton, out of 11 years, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Hall of Fame years. Again, 5 out of 11, at wide receiver at least, not good enough to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You look at their postseason stats, Clayton played in 12 games. Nothing impressive in the postseason. In 12 postseason games, 500 yards, 3 touchdowns. Again, ordinary numbers. Mark Duper, his postseason stats are a little better. He played in 10 games, 595 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's actually not bad. But overall, neither one of these guys are Hall of Famers by the stat sheets and pretty much by any marker. Again, Mark Clayton has a much stronger case. He had two monster years. The year with 18 touchdowns in 84. The year with 14 touchdowns in 88. Even the year with 12 touchdowns in 91. Those are three big years. But it's not enough. Not enough for him to crack the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Especially at the wide receiver position. Which is so, so difficult. Especially these days when you have so many wide receivers retiring. Who play in an era where the numbers are just inflated. So those guys, I understand why they're not in the Hall of Fame, and honestly, they will never get in now, just because it's been so many years removed. Having them on the ballot is virtually impossible. But yeah, that is a question that is asked a lot and talked a lot in circles of Miami Dolphins fans. Once again, both of those players are outstanding players. Nobody is taking that away from them. They did, you know, amazing things on the field. But when you're talking about Hall of Fame level players, you know, they're just not. They're just not. And that's not a knock on them. They're just not. And they should not be in the Hall of Fame like they are. So, good question there from Helen. Next question from Ed in Miami. Have you watched any bit of Jay Cutler on Barry Cavallari? I believe that's how it's pronounced. And the answer is no. Just not my type of show. Wouldn't spend 2 seconds watching it. I've seen some fans talk about it and tweet about it and put up little jokes about it, but I'm just not going to watch that type of show. And I'll say this about Jay Cutler, just off on a tangent. You know, last year wasn't good, obviously. And I know it's easy for fans of the Miami Dolphins to just sort of rip him, pick on him, bash him, crack jokes about Jay Cutler. And I get it. I get it. But, you know, he was thrown into a mess. He was retired, didn't plan on playing anymore. Tannehill goes down, and Miami, they had to go find a warm body to play quarterback. The options were horrible. Jay Cutler was the best of a bad option. He wasn't a good option. He was the best of all the bad options. And I don't know what fans expected. When Tannehill went down last year on August 3rd, I believe, off the top of my head, I might be off by 1 or 2 days. You know, their season ended right then and there. It didn't matter if they signed Kaepernick, if they signed Mike Vick, it wouldn't have mattered, okay? They were going to probably win their 4, 5, 6 games no matter what, and it wouldn't have mattered. They could have played Matt Moore from day one. It wouldn't have mattered. So Jay Cutler, look, he was bad last year on the field. He looked bad. He didn't play well. But, I mean, I'm not one to sort of pile on him and sort of crack jokes. He was put in a bad spot. The team was in a bad spot. What did anybody realistically expect? So, Jay Cutler, I haven't watched his show with his wife. Don't have any plans on watching it. But I'm not as down on him as most fans are. Look, Jay Cutler had a so-so NFL career. You know, he had his moments where he was really good, and he had lots of moments where he was really bad. He made a lot of money. God bless him. He has his health when he walked away from the game, it seems like, so kudos for him for that. But I'm not one of these guys. We're just going to pile on Jay Cutler every chance you get. Yeah, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad Tannehill's back. But just leave it at that, folks. Let the man live his life. He was not prepared to come back last year. But he gave it a shot. And he gave it one more shot. And I'm not going to knock him for that. But, you know, I don't know what fans expected out of him. Because, you know, when you get a phone call in August, less than 1 month away from the season, and you haven't prepared for months, and you're also coming off an injury, I mean, I don't know what Miami Dolphins fans expected. So I'm not going to get on him that bad because, you know, it was a blip in the history of the Miami Dolphins franchise. Jay Cutler is a blip. And to spend any more time on that is just, you're just wasting energy. Next question from Jesse in Fort Lauderdale. What are your thoughts on Cordarrelle Tankersley as a player? Can he be as good as Xavien Howard? Good questions. Good question, Jesse, because I like Tankersley a lot. For anyone who's listened to this podcast for any length of time knows that I am a big fan of Cordarrelle Tankersley. He has the skill set to be successful in the NFL in this day of age. You need the size, the length, the speed, and he can cover as well as anybody else. Now, last year when he was thrown into the fire against the Saints in the game in London, you know, he probably wasn't ready. But throwing him into that game, and from then on, you know, he held his own for the most part. He really did hold his own. He wasn't overmatched at times. He wasn't, I mean, at times he was overmatched, but for the most part, he really wasn't. He had his, you know, mental flaws here and there. I remember the game against the Jets at home. I think he got beat bad once or twice. But aside from a handful of plays, which I'll take out of any rookie, really, aside from a handful of plays, you know, he played well. And he showed me a lot last year. Now, towards the end of the year, he started to get hurt and he missed some time. That happens. But Tankersley, to me, is a guy who I think in a year or two is going to make a big leap. Now, can he be as good as Xavien Howard? Tough question. Because, look, Xavien Howard, he ended last year playing at a high level very well. And hopefully he carries that over into 2018. He continues to play well at the high level. We don't know for certain. I think he will, but I don't know for certain. But let's say he does. Say he picks up this year where he left off last year. To say, can Tankersley reach that level? I don't know. I would probably venture to say no. But I think Tankersley has the skill set to be a very good number two cornerback in this league. And in this league, which is pass happy as we know, where guys are throwing it around all the time because just how the way the rules are set up and everything else, you need multiple high-quality cornerbacks, and I think Tankersley fits the bill. I think he can be a high-quality number two cornerback in this league. Might not be this year. Might be a year from now. But I see him as a guy who had a strong rookie year. He's still very young, and I think the arrow is pointing in the right direction. A lot of promise there, and I don't think he's reached his ceiling yet. So a big fan of Cordarrelle Tankersley. I'm a big fan of the secondary overall. I think when you got guys like Tankersley, when you got guys like Howard, when you got guys like Fitzpatrick, Rashad Jones, TJ McDonald, I think this has a chance to be a special group. And if this group can gel, can mold together, and most importantly, stay healthy, because if you're not healthy, I mean, you are screwed in this league. If this group can stay healthy, stay on the field together, I think they have the ability to be special. And I think they will be the strength of the Miami Dolphins defense in 2018. I don't think it's going to be the front line. I think up front, Miami's got some issues. I think Miami's got major issues at defensive tackle, and I think they may have major issues at, not major issues at linebacker. I think they still have weaknesses at linebacker, let's just say. So I think the front seven is still going to be a work in progress, but I think the secondary is going to be the cornerstone of the Miami Dolphins defense in 2018. Next question. Now look, I'm going to read this question, but I really didn't want to. But someone took the time to mail it in, and I'm going to answer it for him. This is from Johnny in Pittsburgh. Johnny, you're a good man, but this is a topic I really don't want to spend a lot of time on, so I'm not going to harp on it because it's one of those endless topics that everyone has an opinion on, and there's no right or wrong, and people just get their, I don't know. Let me just read the question. Where do you rank Ryan Tannehill among all NFL quarterbacks today? Now, look, I know fans, like I say in this podcast all the time, fans fall into two camps. The fans that love him, and no matter what mistakes are made, no matter what he does, he can do no wrong. If he fumbles, not his fault. If he's hurt, not his fault. If he throws an interception, not his fault. Nothing's ever his fault. Then you got the fans on the other side who say, Tannehill, you know, he could throw for 400 yards, three touchdowns, run for one more touchdown. Miami wins the game, you know, 28 to zip. You know, he still stinks. And no matter what he does, he's always going to stink. So there's the two camps on each end of the extremes. And when it comes to ranking him among other NFL quarterbacks, everyone's got their thoughts. Is he top 10? Is he just outside the top 10? Is he top 15? Is he top 20? I don't look. Here's the deal. Here's how I break it down. This is just my opinion. Don't send me nasty tweets. Don't send me a whole bunch of nasty emails. If you think something else, that's fine, because there's really no right or wrong on this, and everyone has an opinion for the most part, and I'm sure they can back it up. I break down quarterbacks into four groups. You got your A groups, and that's your elite future Hall of Famers. We know who they are. Boom. You got your B group, who is close to being an A group. You know, guys who are who can win games for you, and guys who are very, very good, but not quite in the A group. You got your C group, who are guys who aren't, who, if everything goes right around them, they can, you know, win you games and lead you to the playoffs. Then you got your D group, guys who probably shouldn't even be starters in the league. So let's, and I'm just going to do this quick. I'm not spending a half hour on this stuff, on this topic, because I know you probably could. The A group to me, the top end quarterbacks, the no-brainers, guys who are probably going to Canton, Ohio, and will probably be in the Hall of Fame someday. Some will, obviously, but some, you know, might be, might not. The A group today, 2018, I got seven guys. In no special order, no special order. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Big Ben, Rivers. Those seven to me, in whichever order you want to rank them, are the seven best quarterbacks in the NFL today. Bar none, I don't think there's even a debate. Now, you can now, who's one, who's four, who's six, mix them up any way you want. Those seven of Tom Brady, Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Big Ben, Philip Rivers, your A class. The B class, those are the guys knocking on the door. They might be in the A class. Some years they might not, but they're knocking on the door, in my opinion. There's only four. And those four are Russell Wilson, Wentz from Philadelphia, Matthew Stafford, and Eli Manning. Eli Manning's won two Super Bowls, and there's still times where he looks like he belongs in the A class, honestly. Those four are your B class. So between the A and the B, I just named the top 11 quarterbacks, in my opinion, in the NFL. Now, when it comes to the C class, this is where I have Ryan Tannehill. So you can rank him anywhere from 12 down, and in my book, you wouldn't be wrong. So the guys in the C class, just to name a few, are guys like Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, Carr, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco, Alex Smith, Marcus Mariota, that group of guys. So if you're asking me where would Tannehill rank, you know, obviously not the top 11. Out of the group in the C, I'm not going to go through and rank each one of these guys. I wouldn't say Tannehill's at the top of that list, but he's also not the bottom. I like him more than guys like Dalton. I like him a little bit more than guys like Smith. Even Flacco these days, he doesn't look good. So, to me, Tannehill's ranked in that middle part, 15 to 20. Again, that's not a knock on him. That's not an insult. He's a good quarterback where If you can give him a running game, you give him solid wide receivers, you block for him, and Miami can play okay on defense. You know, they can win 10, 11 games, get to a playoffs, and, you know, roll the dice, see what happens there. He's that type of guy. He needs everything around him to work, though. And that's a guy who's ranked somewhere around 15 to 20. He's not in the top 11. I'm sorry, he's not. And like I said, in that group of C guys, the C-class guys, and this is how I do it. I know everybody, they do it their own way. You know, you got guys like Carr, Kirk Cousins, Joe Flacco, Alex Smith, Mariota. A few of those guys I would rank higher than Tannehill. I'd probably rank Mariota higher than Tannehill. Kirk Cousins, if you look at their stats, they're about equal. But I'd probably rank him one slot higher than him, maybe two. Winston, if he's not in trouble, I'd rank higher than him. But he's always in trouble, so that does knock him down some. So, you know, Tannehill's in that, you know, 15 to 20 range. Again, that's not a knock. And that's just where I rank him. And if you rank him higher, God bless you. If you think he's at the bottom of the list of starting quarterbacks, God bless you. I'm not going to argue with you over it because, again, there's no right or wrong. Everyone's got their own rankings. Everyone's got their own thoughts. And it's, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But from Johnny in Pittsburgh here, who's a fan of our site, who sent this in, he asked me to rank him. That's where I got him, somewhere in that 15 to 20 range. And that's where I think he belongs because I think he's a very good player. But, you know, he's not one of the top 10, 12, 13 quarterbacks in the league. He's just not. And if you think he is, that's great, but I don't think he is. So that's that. Next question from Mike in Yorktown. Do you think there is a veteran who could be a surprise cut by the end of training camp this year? That's a good question. And I do. And I'm probably going to surprise people when I say this. The guy to watch who might be a surprise cut. First off, you got to look at, you have to look at a position of strength. That's where a surprise would come. It's not going to come from a position of weakness. So Miami's weak at defensive tackle. They're weak at linebacker. They're not going to make a surprise move there because they're going to need all the guys they got there and probably look to add some from somewhere else. So that's not where a surprise is going to come. A surprise is going to come from a position of strength where there's a lot of depth and maybe a young guy beats out someone who's, you know, pretty good, but they're down on the depth chart. And to me, the name I think to watch for various reasons, which I will explain, is Tony Lippett. Now, I'm not saying Lippett's going to get cut, so don't go crazy. Say, oh my God, how are you saying Lippett's going to get cut? I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's coming off an injury. Number one, we don't know if he's up to speed yet. From all reports, he said he's feeling good, but the actual long speed, meaning when he has to run way downfield and keep up with someone, he's still struggling with. So the injury might be a factor here. Number two, I think he's going into the final year of his contract. Number three, Miami's really deep at corner. They're really deep. We obviously know the guys who I talked about earlier, Howard, Tankersley, McCain, Fitzpatrick, you got those four. Then you got the two younger guys. You got someone like Torrey McTyer, who was on the roster at the end of last year, played well. You got the kid that they're high on from Utah State who went undrafted, Jalen Davis. If those two guys play well, you know, they're young. They're both undrafted. They don't make a lot of money. Could they push out someone like Lippett, who might not be 100% still, who's down on the depth chart possibly come the end of training camp? It's possible. I'm just saying it's possible. Do I think Lippett will make the team? Yes, I do think he will make the team. But if you're asking me who could be a surprise cut, I think someone like Lippett is someone to keep an eye on. That's all I'm saying. Keep an eye on Lippett because if he, you know, if he's not practicing a lot the first few weeks of camp, if he's not playing in preseason games the first few weeks of camp, and he's slow to recover, just keep an eye on him. Miami, now look, they could just keep an eye on him because I think at cornerback, there's just so much depth there that if one of these young kids really, you know, rises up and has an amazing summer and is amazing in camp and amazing in the preseason games, it's going to be tough to cut a guy like that when you put him up against someone like Lippett who's coming off an injury and might not be 100%. So that's what I'm saying. So he asked me for someone who's a surprise. He might be a surprise. I can't think of anyone else, honestly. Wide receivers, I don't see any surprises there. I'm not going to say Leonte Carew would be a surprise because at this point he's done nothing. That's not a surprise. Tight ends, nothing would shock me. Offensive line, nothing would shock me. A quarterback, nothing would shock me. I mean, yeah, I would say it probably come from the secondary. And I would probably say Lippitt's the guy who probably could be a surprise, although I don't really see it happening. But if I had to put down a buck on someone, I'd say Lippitt is the one to keep an eye on. But hopefully he's healthy, and hopefully he returns to form like he played in 2016, because before he got hurt, you know, he had a heck of a year in 2016. So if he can return to that, Miami will be very, very fortunate. Let's do one more question. Let's do one more. Sean in Tallahassee, not including Dan Marino, who is your favorite Miami Dolphins player of all time? Now that's a tough one. That's a tough one. All time. Well, I'll give you three, because it's tough to pick one. And since we're not counting Marino, and I'm not going to pick anyone from like the early 1970s who I never really saw play. That's not fair either. I'm talking about guys I saw play. First and foremost, and I would say in the top three, O.J. McDuffie, when he played, was one of my favorite players. And it's been a thrill the past year and a half or so to have him on this podcast, you know, four or five times, however many times you've had him. It's been a thrill because I grew up as a teenager, a huge fan of O.J. McDuffie when he played in the early 90s. I think he was drafted in 93. So, a huge fan of O.J. McDuffie. I just like the way he played and everything about the way he played. So, big fan of O.J. So, I would say he's in the top three for sure. And I've been lucky enough since I started this podcast to be able to talk to him, you know, numerous times. Like I said, four or five, six times we've had him on. Talked to him numerous times and just a super nice guy, super sweet, always so friendly when I've talked to him off the air and on. So can't say enough positives. I would say O.J. McDuffie for sure is in the top three. Another guy who I was a huge fan of in the 90s is Brian Cox. Brian Cox, if you grew up a Miami Dolphins fan in the 80s and 90s, like me, Miami was miserable on defense for many years. Obviously, Marino was putting up points left and right, but Miami, they could not stop anybody to save their lives. And when you think of the Miami Dolphins defense from, you know, like 84, 85 on to like the early 90s, you know, you can't even name. I mean, John Offerdahl, maybe, but he's probably the best guy on defense Miami had for like 10 years. And not a knock on him. He's a great player, John Offerdahl. He wasn't that great. You know what I mean? He was a good linebacker. A good linebacker. Never a great linebacker. Brian Cox, when he got in Miami around 91, he brought an attitude. He brought a swagger. And he brought fight to that side of the ball. And for the 4 or 5 years he was a Miami Dolphins linebacker, he made that defense. He made that unit tick. He made that unit fight for every yard on the field. And I loved watching Brian Cox. As someone who, in that time, lived in Buffalo Bills country, when he walked into Rich Stadium, it was known at the time, and flipped the middle finger to all those fans, I ate it up. I thought it was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. To this day, I still think it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life, because Miami was so soft as a team, especially on defense. Tom Olivadotti stunk. He was a terrible defensive coordinator. I'm sorry, he just was. But that unit was soft and had no attitude, no swagger. They had nothing until Brian Cox came to Miami. Fifth round pick out of Little Western Illinois, a nobody. And he got to Miami and he brought it to that team on defense. And, you know, from that time on, we saw a different Miami Dolphins defense. When he eventually left after the 95 year, I mean, I was heartbroken because I was a huge fan of Brian Cox, a huge fan of him. So I would say like I said, I can't just pick one. Top three, in no special order, O.J. McDuffie, Brian Cox. The third one, and this is kind of funny because when I had O.J. McDuffie on the podcast a week ago there, and we were talking about his new podcast and people he should have on, I, of course, mentioned Brian Cox. The other guy who I mentioned, who he needs to have on as a guest, and I think he will, from what I spoke to him and his co-host Seth there, was Terrell Buckley. And Terrell Buckley, for those, I mean, look, I know many of you who listen to this podcast, you know, are younger, might not have been around or might have been too young to follow the Miami Dolphins in the mid-1990s. And I'm talking about the Terrell Buckley in Miami from 95 to 99. Not the one who came back in 2003 after he won his ring with the Patriots. Not that Buck. I'm talking 95 to 99. Terrell Buckley, if Brian Cox, he brought that attitude to that side of the ball. When he left, Terrell Buckley picked up the baton and ran with it. Because Terrell Buckley, for those of you who don't know, is maybe the legendary trash talker. I'm not going to say in NFL history, but he's probably up there at the top of the list. This guy was it. He was just the man because he did not care. He claims he invented the Lambeau Leap. Terrell Buckley played defense. How could you invent the Lambeau Leap playing defense? He's got some whacked out stories. He is, but when it came time to play on the field, he brought it every week. And he didn't care who he was going up against. He brought attitude. He just was a guy who was looking for the big play. He jumped routes any chance he got. And more times than not, it worked out. More times than not. Not always. He got burnt a few times as well. But Terrell Buckley was a joy to watch. And he was a joy to listen to in an interview. Some of the stuff that came out of his mouth, you would just laugh. Your jaw would hit the floor. You just wouldn't believe some of the things he said. And Terrell Buckley, and let's also think about this. Terrell Buckley was a first-round pick of the Packers. I think he went in the top five. He was like pick number five or six by the Packers. They sort of got him right out of Florida State, obviously, and they couldn't put up with him for more than a couple years. Like, they just couldn't put up with him because the attitude, the swagger, the whole thing of Terrell Buckley. They sent him to Miami in a trade. They pretty much handed him away. They didn't trade, you know, sometimes you hear this a lot in baseball where a guy is traded for future considerations, which means we're going to send him to you now, and somewhere down the road, we're going to make another trade, and you give us, you know, some guy in like A-ball or something, you know, like a nobody. He was sent to Miami for past considerations. It's the only trade in NFL history for past considerations, because if you look at the trades, Miami and the Packers never made a trade. There was never no past considerations to be made. They essentially gave him to Miami just because they couldn't put up with Terrell Buckley and everything that was around him as a player. But I thoroughly enjoyed those 4 years or so when he was in Miami. Terrell Buckley, again, I mean, how he got along with Don Shula for that 1 year, I will never know. Because you could not get more polar opposites of players. But Terrell Buckley was a joy to watch on that side of the ball on defense. And again, those are the guys who, outside of Marino, obvious no-brainer, were probably my favorite guys on the Miami Dolphins. I would say O.J. McDuffie, Brian Cox, Terrell Buckley. If there's a fourth, who could maybe crack those top three, Ronnie Brown. I mean, look, Ronnie Brown, Wildcat, any fan that didn't fall in love with that, you know, you don't have a pulse. But Ronnie Brown, again, he was a guy, great attitude, played hard all the time, and was just fun to watch as a player, easy to root for. So those are my guys. But like I said, top three, O.J. McDuffie, Brian Cox, Terrell Buckley, just as a kid, as a teenager, watching the Miami Dolphins in the 80s and 90s, well, with those guys in the 90s, I just loved rooting for them. They were some of my favorite Miami Dolphins players that will stick with me forever. And I've been lucky enough to talk to O.J. McDuffie multiple times on this podcast, talk to him off the air a bit, and have him on, obviously, and couldn't be a nicer guy, just a true great guy. So hopefully someday I will get to interview guys like Brian Cox and Terrell Buckley. But yeah, those would be my top three all-time Miami Dolphins favorite players outside of Dan Marino. So that's it for today's show. We'll be back with more shows this week. And like I said, I got some interview guests lined up. There should be some fun interviews. And I'll probably drop a show this weekend for sure. If not later this week, maybe before this weekend. But we'll have more shows this week. Of course, if any news breaks, we'll have a show. We'll do a breaking news audio, and we'll have a show out there for you for that. So, everyone, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk. Be sure to follow the main page and our website, DolphinsTalk.com. We also have an Instagram account now at Dolphins Talk. So follow us on all the social medias. Like and follow our Facebook page. Go everywhere. We're everywhere now. And we got more big announcements coming down the road. So everyone, enjoy the rest of your day. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.